We're going to take up now the most fundamental that we can take up. The most fundamental is not Dianetics, modern science of mental health, nor yet Dianetics, the evolution of a science. The basis of basics happens to have been invented long after these books. We are now looking in this unit backwards across the whole of Dianetics and Scientology. And you will find that book one has a place. It has a place, but it's close to the top. We are going to work in this unit with the most basic fundamentals with which we can work. And from these, we are going to evolve the remainder of our material. And we will see where each one of these things we have had fit. And this should be very beneficial. I hope it doesn't fill you with regret, because it is running the time track backwards for many of you. And of course, regret is simply running the time track backwards. Now, the most basic thing for an auditor happens to be on page 23 of the ability issue, which was called the HCA manual. And it's at the top of the page, and it is as follows. Rudiments. One, awareness of the auditor. The auditing room, that an auditing session is in progress. Two, two-way communication on a casual basis. Three, the delivery of the question. Four, communication lag. Five, the acknowledgement of the question. Six, the duplication of that exact question, of course, by the auditor. For an auditor, that is the most fundamental there is. That is something you should know even before you worry about the auditor's code, certainly before you would have to worry about the code of the Scientologist. For in order to make any process work, these fundamentals must be observed. And where your processes have not worked in the last 5 years, we suddenly recognize this very strange fact, that we had a fundamental below fundamentals that had to do simply with the conduct of the session. And where the session was not precisely conducted, and where these various points were not immediately and intimately followed, the most magic incantation ever invented in the history of this universe would not have worked as an auditing question. Therefore, our goal at once with the auditor is not to teach him newer, fancier processes, how to switch in midstream, dream it all up, look through the pre-clear's head, x-ray his chronic somatic, and give him the proper pop question that will blow it all. See, that's clever, but it doesn't work unless we have followed these fundamentals, which you find at the top of page 23 of the ability issue of the HCA manual. This material contains sufficient in it these little steps that I have just given you. Contains sufficient in it to explain why an auditor, for instance, does not have a practice when he doesn't have a practice. Completely aside from whether or not he gets results. You know, it's very possible to have a large and remunerative practice and get no results at all for years and years, centuries. The psychiatrist. They have the most remunerative practices you ever heard of. And the results are not just zero, they're negative gains. So it must be, as far as working in the society is concerned, that a practice is more important than results. It must be just looking at the experience of the society. There are many of us making the error of believing that the practice depends entirely upon our ability to audit a preclear. And that's true. The moment we know about this paragraph to page 23. At the top of page 23, we learn immediately that if you can't find the auditor, if the public can't find the auditor, there is no practice. See, isn't that awfully elementary? I'm really scraping bottom there. Now, why is it that you have difficulty auditing your mother, your father, your wife, your sister? Why is it? It's contained in the first line of basic processes and materials. In the first line there, awareness of the auditor. Is an auditor present? Find the auditor. And let's look at Mama. Mama has a splitting headache, they are colloquially called. And though her headache keeps right on splitting, she would not let the most educated, successful auditor, child auditor, for 3 minutes. She might be quite benign about it, you know, and say, yes, dear, you know. But as far as executing the question, as far as actually going through with the process, she would not do it unless she were aware of the fact that an auditor was sitting there, not the son or the daughter or the husband or the wife. Do you understand? Now, you've all had this experience of having somebody who was practically dead by fatigue or pain, who was close to you and very dear to you. And you have in your hands all the skills necessary to snap them out of it. And be unable to do a single thing. But you could do something if you knew where to start the session. Now, it isn't how far south do we go with the preclear. It's where do we have to start to get a session in progress. And we don't start with a process. We start with finding an auditor. Now, quite in addition to that, and almost parallel with it, and quite as significant in the practice of Scientology, is finding a preclear. That's quite as significant. But believe me, if the auditor is discoverable, the preclears exist. And the preclear begins the session, really, when he has found an auditor. But there's one tiny earlier step for him. He has to find out he's a preclear. So for the auditor, there's that first basic step of getting the preclear to find the auditor. And there's an earlier step for the preclear. But it isn't earlier than the auditor's step. A preclear has to find out he's a preclear. Fabulous. Why should we talk about these stupid simplicities? It's because they are so stupidly simple that 80% of the auditors in Dianetics and Scientology overlook them grandly because they were not articulated. But now that they are articulated, there's no reason to overlook them. Here are auditors around, scattered amongst auditors with successful practices who are being successful, not that all auditing is directed toward having a practice, but auditors who are making a successful inroad into the society, and right in their midst will be auditors who aren't even making a successful inroad into their morning cornmeal. Why? Basically, it's an inability to reach, you can say. Basically, it's an inability to do this or do that. The truth of the matter is that he might be visible as a man, but he is hiding as an auditor. And his hidingness as an auditor reflects instantly on the fact that the public does not find him. The secret of discovering preclears really doesn't lie in reaching just as such, snapping them by the back of the neck and pulling them on in. That's really not the secret of finding preclears. The secret is getting the preclear to find the auditor. And if you are visible as an auditor, if you exist as an auditor, you will have preclears. This is an oddity, but very true. But if you don't exist as an auditor, if an auditor cannot be there to be found, not going to be any preclears. You follow me. Now, this is quite important, because it seems so idiotically simple. But it tells you at once why student auditing is so poor in its immediate result, and why your auditing out in the public is so good. Now, we take some chap who is part of a class, and this class is doing splendidly, no case advancement anywhere in it. And if we were to look over these class results, we would say, God help the public and God help these auditors, because nobody's ever going to get well anywhere. Nowhere will we discover any results, because these students were incapable of getting results upon each other. And really, that's what counts, isn't it? Their initial step is what counts. This is the first auditing they did, and it wasn't successful. So therefore, there aren't going to be any results. And we take any member of the class, and we send him out into an area, and the next thing you know, somebody with lumbosis and somebody else with tumbosis have miraculously recovered themselves under auditing. But the student wasn't able to get any results on any of the people in the class. That's because in a class, you're not auditors, you're all students. And there's our problem. There are no auditors present. There are only students present. So naturally, no auditing is ever done. Now understand that, because we are crossing this bridge and barrier at this exact instant and moment of this fourth London ACC. In the first place, if we were the Rost, Hayfoot, Strawfoot recruits, we could still assert ourselves as auditors in auditing sessions and not students, and thus obtain results. You see that? Well, it so happens that this unit contains some of the most successful auditors around. So it's very, very easy in this unit, if you think of it, to find an auditor. The number of people who have been made well by those people who are assembled probably numbers in some thousands, if we include all the group auditing you've done. Say, at least thousands. And if we throw me in to the works, why, we go upstairs by hundreds of thousands. So there must certainly be an auditor present amongst us, mustn't there? Now, the next thing is find a preclear and have the preclear realize he's a preclear while he is being a preclear. And let me call this to your attention. This, too, is violated in classes on Dianetics and Scientology, because there are no preclears present. There are only students. And so, again, no auditing gets done. This should strike you as very significant, because every one of you has had some sort of experience with classes. And the unalterable, dogged persistence of all the cases therein. And I have given you the magic answer, the simple answer. This all depends to some degree upon an ability to be. If an individual has some slight ability to be, and anyone must have some ability to be, or he wouldn't be able to move the body around at all. It means that an individual who occupies the auditing chair during a session should be an auditor. And the one who occupies the pre-clear's chair should be a pre-clear. Just be a pre-clear, you see. But there is something much more important than that which is going to go on in this fourth London unit. We're going to teach you immediately, instantly, and right now how to make a pre-clear into a pre-clear with a process. It's an interesting thing, but there is a process that fits right in there that really doesn't go on the tone scale anywhere. And it's a process that can be run with benefit to an end conclusion. Now, unfortunately, I have to tell you the conclusion in order for you to run the process. And this process will be run on you, and you will, of course, instantly and immediately give up the pat conclusion because you have been told what the pat conclusion is. And then, believe me, you will probably come off of it. Because it can't be bucked that long. The question is this. What are you doing? And you just go on asking this question, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? And the fellow goes on and on and on and on and on. It's very therapeutic. He tells you all sorts of things he's doing, and the fellow went on telling me that he was sitting there being asked questions and that we were in two-way communication. And he told me all kinds of textbook answers and actual answers and so forth. And we had been at it practically an hour, or at least 45 minutes, before he suddenly turned kind of red and embarrassed. He said, I'm being audited. And do you know something? I had been auditing him a half an hour before that, for a whole half an hour, and I wasn't making any gains. And this was an insult. Now, of course, I didn't invent that process just for that reason. This is an old one. This is a sneaky one that's been around for some little time that we've been using. But it is nevertheless true that I was making no gains. No gains at all. Because here was a young man who was accustomed to teaching Scientology, who was accustomed to observing auditing, and who was quite accustomed to observing effects caused by processes because he was interested in getting results upon pre-clears. And he had fallen entirely out of the habit of being a pre-clear. Not only fallen out of the habit, it had become quite foreign to his nature. So the last many times he was being audited, he was sitting there in communication with somebody. He obviously wasn't being audited at all. Now he had two violations of this thing at the top of page 23. There was no auditor present and there was no pre-clear present. Otherwise, we were having a wonderful session. Now, the oddity is the student who is working as a pre-clear or as an auditor is apt to simply assume this matter. And now, because I've told you the trick replies, you'll have to probably ask them a lot longer than you would have to get the actual answer. Because the first answers you will get, well, I'm being audited, of course. Well, we got over that one. I can go on here sort of itching the back of my neck, which is what I've been doing. The fellow knows what he's doing sitting in that chair. He's scratching his neck. He knows what he's doing sitting in that chair. He is looking over his past. He knows what he's doing sitting in that chair. He's just sitting in that chair. He knows what he's doing there. He's talking with somebody. Yes, what are you doing? Well, I'm sitting here. Well, what are you doing? Well, I'm, and so forth, until he finally I'm being audited. The way you'll get it as a student is I'm being audited first now. He'll go off down the groove. You'll probably have to work over a little bit, a grave amount of distrust on the subject of the auditor and so forth. See, people are really going to have to work this one out. You're really going to hash this out. And you'll have to hash it out at the beginning of every session. One way or the other. Have to talk it over. Of course, you find remarkable boo-boos in student auditing that you never find the people doing after they get out of class. I don't know why this is. Maybe it's just too right around these units. And they have to have a bit of wrongness to overbalance it. But some remarkable things occur in student auditing. Very remarkable. One of those things that happened one day is... I get these, by the way, in weekly reports from various units all over the world. And there's some of them that are screamers. But we won't go into the funnier ones. The more interesting ones from our viewpoint today consist of failing to recognize the present time atmosphere, the pre-clear, to be a Scientological auditing atmosphere, and failure to recognize that the pre-clear is doing a lot of auditing and that the auditing might have gotten snarled up one way or the other with his case. And when you ask what he's doing or his present time problem or anything like this to start the session, he's liable to start telling you about his pre-clear. And this one case for five consecutive days... A student auditor who was being audited as a pre-clear tried to unload on his auditor the horrible present time problem of his own pre-clear, who was a thorough mess, who was the most discouraging sort of a pre-clear you ever ran in. You know, nothing's happening. Well, I suppose we're going to get a lot of more code breaks today. Day after day, this student who was being audited was under this type of duress and was a present time problem to him because he was very upset about his free clear, far more upset about his free clear than he should have been. And every time he brought this up, his auditor said to him, "Oh, we don't want to talk about auditing. Let's let's get down to business here." Or he said, "Oh, the devil with that. Don't complain to me about your pre-clears. I've got trouble enough of my own. Now let's get a session in here." And it practically wound this other student up in a spin. He was being utterly damned on his communication lines. The only present time problem he had was being ignored by the auditor. The only thing he wanted to talk about, the only thing he felt obsessive and compulsive about was just that. So he'd have to dub in the remainder of the session. So he just sat there and dubbed in a session for the auditor. Now that did him a lot of good, didn't it? All right. Now, if we look this problem over, we will discover that the interrelationship of the auditor and the pre-clear is not basically one of altitude, but it is basically one of ARC. And where there is no certainty as to the identity of the person who is auditing you, there is not likely to be much communication, with the reality missing. The affinity and the communication go down. Now, I'll tell you some ways to really inspire confidences in someone who knows Scientology. You know, you're auditing somebody who is an auditor, and this is a good way to inspire confidence. Open up a book and look for the process. Let's see, what are we supposed to do here today? Where is that we heard about in that lecture? Let's see. It's a good way to inspire confidence. He practically bursts with enthusiasm over something like this. One time I was audited by a book auditor, and one gets abandoned in life, you know, and he says, survive, 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 the devil with it, you know. And so I got audited by this book auditor. And the book auditor opened up Dianetics of Modern Science of Mental Health and read to me The Canceller. Do you remember The Canceller?
Yes.
Read it to me out of the book. Now, nothing I say to you during this session will have any effect on you after the session. So, you know. And then painfully and carefully looked up in my book my own words and quoted them back to me. It was a great session. Left me stuck on the track, most thorough thing I ever saw. Right there, sitting in front of a typewriter, writing the damn thing. And, of course, I had to make out like a stout fellow, so like a fool, I just ignored this. And I found out about 3 hours after the quote session, unquote, that I was sitting there, had the beautiful facsimile of a typewriter squarely in front of my face. And I couldn't imagine what it was all about, but there I was, typing The Canceller. It happened. It was late at night, and I was very tired. And it just went in, bang, just like that. All right. Our problems in delivering processes are today much simplified by the fact that the processes are more effective than the mistakes. Now, that's quite an announcement, if you think about it. Quite an announcement. There was a time in Dianetics and Scientology when the mistakes were more effective than the processes. Now, you get a good look at that when I say, you make a bad auditor code break. And then spend the next half an hour getting rid of it. Or the next two sessions getting rid of that auditor code break. That ever happened to any of you? Make an auditor code break according to the preclear. And then you patch it up. It only took you 3 seconds to make the auditor code break, and it took you a half an hour or a couple of sessions to patch it up. You kicked the bed, or you dropped the ashtray, or you did something, you know, or you suddenly contradicted him, or you evaluated for him unintentionally for a moment, and bango, and then you patch, 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 patch. Doesn't work that way today. Doesn't work that way today. In the first place, two-way communication will readily reestablish an auditing relationship. A very bad error could be made by an auditor in not using processes, and that would be about the first and only error that he could make today. Let us say he's delivering a process which is much too tough for the preclear. He's delivering a process, something on this order. Think thought. And the preclear goes grind, 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 crunch, 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 crunch. And finally he says, I'm sitting here. All right, that's good, that's good. Now think another thought, see? Grind, grind, grind. And he's going on at this fine rate. And the auditor starts to yawn, feels dopey, isn't too alert, and says, all right, think another thought. And the preclear goes, grind, 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 crunch, clatter, tinkle, grind. And all of a sudden flies to pieces. The auditor isn't very alert. Didn't notice the preclear was getting agitated. Didn't notice that this process was producing more stress than it should have produced. Because he was sort of groggy, you know. Wasn't alert. And because the preclear becomes agitated on the process, and because the process is leaving the preclear in a calm lag, the auditor then brightly says, all right, think another thought. Of course, one of the solutions to this is shoot the auditor. That's what the preclear feels like. He's being delivered some deadly poison, which is clogging his entire mental machinery. And he is in revolt. He is unable to overcome this problem. And what do we get as a result? We get this thing which should never happen. The preclear blows the session, which is to say he walks out, he leaves, he quits, he doesn't want to be audited again. How did that come about? When the preclear goes under stress and strain on a process, this is the little law about it, you do two things. You drop him a point on processes, you drop him to a lower process instantly, and go into two-way communication at the same time. Got it? He starts to get tense and upset. Start talking to him and inviting him to talk to you, and ARC will be reestablished just like that. And if any preclear gets upset, it's because the auditor has not been sufficiently on the qui vive to recognize that stress. Follow me? And that's about the only thing an auditor can do wrong these days. And we don't get these worries about auditor code breaks on the part of the preclear. Because if you will notice, the preclear brought up the subject of auditor code breaks only after two-way communication had been neglected. So that he wanted to shove something back at the auditor, so he practically made an auditor code break happen. You see that? The preclear has a considerable responsibility in creating breaks, particularly with a trained auditor. He will call some of the darndest things breaks, only he doesn't even know the auditor's code. He just knows he has been offended. And you could add it up one way or the other, and his complaint is then based upon some fancied wrong or some actual tiny omission. But the only time he ever does it is just before he's beginning to blow the session anyway. The phenomenon of going out of communication with the auditor has already occurred when the preclear gets into a mood which will cause him to blow the session, or say that an auditor code break is there, or decide case-wise that he has experienced an auditor code break and stick somewhere. You follow me? It's just as easy as can be. An auditor code break only takes place, and this is another little rule that we've never written down anywhere, but it's quite obvious and we should know. An auditor code break only takes place when the preclear has decided that there is malintention on the part of the auditor. And when the preclear has decided upon bad intentions, breaks can then occur. But no auditor code break, except those that purely relate to mechanical things such as auditing after 10 o'clock at night and so on. And that isn't even harmful if an auditor is really sharp. A break cannot occur until the preclear is in a frame of mind to consider that breaks can occur. And what is that frame of mind? He is agitated, he is upset, he feels that he is under attack, he feels he is being driven in some direction or not driven in some direction that he needs to be driven in, so that he begins to get irritated with the auditor. But there's an actual process down the line here called two-way communication. But more important than that, right in this paragraph, we have this next step to two-way communication on a casual basis. Learn how to be very casual on two-way communication and get the preclear to originate communications. Don't be like a Prussian drill sergeant on the subject of two-way communication. It is light, it is airy, it has life in it. And it can be terribly casual and fantastically therapeutic. So, let us say a preclear was getting more and more irritated and more likely to blow. Let's just take a typical case on opening procedure by duplication. Supposing he was just getting irritated and getting all ready to blow the session. Already two-way communication would have been neglected. But the first patch-up would be two-way communication. Must have been too little of it, otherwise he wouldn't have gotten into this bad ARC with the auditor. Must have been too little of it. So that's repaired at once. And the process is not begun again until one is fairly sure that the ARC has been restored. And if that is a long time in being restored, you can drop back to HC. You could run him between these two items for a little while, just having him spot them. You could drop that all the way back to locational processing, couldn't you? Where is that book anyway? You know, where is that bottle? All right, now let's discuss the location of that bottle. To hell with this damn bottle. He's at least talking. You see, I don't blame you a bit. You know, yep. And he talked it over and so forth. And you really haven't deserted the process. You get how deftly, however, though, you have dropped right down scale on the processes. You're not running off pro by dupe. You may be running below two-way communication. You may be running simple locational processing. You know how many bottles are there in the room anyway. Any old way you want to go about it, you know, pick him up a little bit. And now, when he is in good ARC, come back up to that process. Now, the other thing is that with these rules obeyed, a preclear really never gets into the state of mind of believing stress and strain exists until he has been asked to do something he cannot easily do. Auditing is a gradient scale. You'd be surprised how fast a gradient scale can be run. Here's a great oddity. There's a tremendous part of the mechanism of firing a rifle, of training people to fire rifles, consists in getting them to properly squeeze the trigger. That is a gunnery instructor who is being very, very precise and who is a good instructor, puts an awful lot of time on that. He shows them how to light up sights and do a lot of other things. But how to handle that hand around that trigger is very, very important, because if he squeezes it too rapidly or gives it a convulsive twitch in some direction or another, he can jerk the whole weapon off the target. And the secret is never quite to know when the gun is going off. Never quite know when the gun is going off. Never know at which point of the squeeze the gun will fire. And people interpret this as necessarily a slow squeeze. The thumb has to be brought down on the grip as smoothly as the finger is depressed on the trigger. And one does not quite know where that gun actually drops its firing pin and fires. And if he does that, he becomes one of these phenomenal marksmen. It's as easy as that. Of course, he couldn't have St. Vitus dance and become this, but I've even seen fellows who looked like they had St. Vitus dance, but yet who knew how to squeeze that trigger and who did keep blasting him right into the black of the bullseye. Now, why are we bringing this up? It's because of the usual and common supposition that if you must squeeze a trigger and not know what part of the squeeze is going to drop the firing pin, really, you must therefore, the recruit supposes, squeeze the trigger slowly, and that it's going to take a little time to fire that weapon. Let's see how closely we could cut down the not knowingness interval. Well, we can cut it down, actually, to a very, very low level. 5 shots a second. Now, that's how fast you could actually squeeze a trigger. Now, this sounds incredible, but this is in pistol work. In order to get these fantastic trick shots, you know, where the fellow takes his hand, holds it out in front of him here, drops a matchbox, reaches down to his belt, pulls out a gun, and puts a slug in it. He wouldn't hit the thing at all if he didn't squeeze the trigger. Did you get that fantastically short interval? Well, similarly, in Scientology, there's no reason why a gradient scale takes a long time. No reason at all. You can do a very, very fast gradient scale, which is very fast and very effective. There's no reason why you have to take 5 hours to get somebody to remedy havingness by creative processing, which includes, of course, throwing things away as well as pulling them in. You very well might be able to do it in 6 or 7 minutes, if you know how. The gradient is sufficiently steep. You don't know exactly at what point he's going to be able to discard mock-ups. And if your gradient is not steep enough, 5 hours later, you're still trying to get him to get rid of a mock-up. But if it is just right, and you have him in good two-way communication, it really shouldn't take you more than 6 or 7 minutes. You get this pretty clear? The remedy of havingness, you know, is to remedy the need to have, not just to pull things into the body, the way many people interpret it. So, this individual must be able to chuck away objects and have them really go away. Not get out there 10 feet and stick. And you get somebody who can get some big sort of mock-up, and he finds that whenever he tries to throw one away, that it goes out there 2.5 feet and sticks, you know? And then you finally, working on a gradient scale very hard and very arduously, showing you're doing a good job, doing it arduously, you fix him up so he can get them out there 3 feet. And an hour later, you have him fixed up on gradient scale so he can get them out there 4 feet. And 2 hours after that, he is actually able to get them out almost to the horizon. Now that is a very, very shallow climb. If you're hot, you could get the whole thing done in about 6-7 minutes. This person was never able to throw anything away. You can have them chucking things away all over the place. Then, of course, you can spend an hour practicing on it if you want to. You can get this person completely convinced that he can do this with anything. He can do all sorts of things. But the actual reestablishment of being able to throw things away should not take very much time. You should add up the pre-clear, but you should particularly add up what? Is there an auditor? Is there a pre-clear? Now, here's a trick we're going to pull out, and I say, Ron said, you know, it only took 6 or 7 minutes to do this thing. And you say, here we sit, after 10 hours, it's just some more of his confounded optimism. There's a missing ingredient here. You were sitting there for 10 hours. You were probably not auditing for 10 hours. Otherwise, you would have gotten something done. So there must have been some fundamental overlooked. Well, now, the point I'm making is that you have to be continuously aware of these fundamentals, because at any time the pre-clear may slip out of session. An auditor may cease to exist. The pre-clear may stop being a pre-clear. And when this occurs, it is signaled by this interesting fact: two-way communication goes to hell. You know the best way in the world to reestablish that? It's simply to start the session all over again. Find an auditor, find a pre-clear, find an auditing session, find the room. You can do these things very unobviously, by the way. You can become fantastically clever at doing these things. Sometimes it's just enough to call his attention to the fact that you are the auditor and that he is the pre-clear, but you can do this very indirectly and very subtly. Like, have you felt any change by reason of our auditing in this first half hour? You know, he's starting to skid a little bit. You're not evaluating for him. You're just bringing him back to the fact that we do have an auditing session in progress. Get the idea? Well, that's what you're doing. When two-way communication goes out, the session also has gone out. Now, if a huge fuse box were sitting there, and an obvious material item, such as a bus bar, had gone boom and thrown a shower of sparks all over the inside of the fuse box, you'd know exactly what to do. You would take the levers, or disconnect them, and you'd put another bus bar in there, see? And you'd reconnect the whole thing, clang, and we would now have everything running again, wouldn't we? But in auditing, we deal with very light things, very light and airy things indeed. And we very often don't discover that the bus bar has gone boom. Well, every time it goes in this fashion, you actually have to haul up short without appearing to do so and start the session again, because the session just ended. As far as the preclear is concerned, the session is over. He even says so sometimes. He says, I don't think this is doing me any good. He may just say that to himself privately. I'll just play along with this dope. And you understand, the session is over. Now, what got finished? What was over? Not this ethereal thing called a session. What was over was the role of the auditor, the role of the preclear. And when those were over, the auditing session was, of course, over. And the symptom of this occurring is the cessation of two-way communication. And the thing that starts it happening is too little two-way communication, and we get another point, acknowledgement. Too little acknowledgement. If this universe had customarily said to you, any of you, or to your preclears, or anyone else, yes, yes, okay, fine. If it had said these things, you wouldn't be stuck in any part of it. You follow me? So why stick a preclear in a session to a point where his time track no longer progresses into the remainder of the session? Now, the mechanics of it are very simple. Lack of acknowledgement, of course, is a specialized lack of two-way communication. And where the preclear gets stuck, the session doesn't progress because he is not progressing along the time track of the session. See, he's stuck at 14 minutes past the starting point of the session. There was insufficient acknowledgement and two-way communication at that point. So he's stuck. Now, what little of him is left perhaps sticks at 26 minutes. And then some of him he hasn't got sticks at 39 minutes. And it's awfully hard to stick something that isn't there. But at this point, he very definitely considers the session over. At 14 minutes past, the session was over. No time track was advancing through the session. So it must have been over. So there can't any longer be an auditor there or a preclear there. The situation is a past situation. Lack of acknowledgement has placed the entire auditing session in the past. And there he sits with an auditing session in the past. And you've got a condition which is like this. A were-auditor, that's different than a were-wolf. And a were preclear. And a were session. As far as the preclear is concerned. If you could lift up the top of his thetan and look at him with a thetascope of some type, you would undoubtedly find him beamed on an exact point 14 minutes deep into the session. And then what attention he had left beamed into 28 minutes past there. Well, now, at 28 minutes, he would show every symptom of blowing the session. He won't show them at 14 minutes. But when he gets restuck again, he's just kind of lethargic and he isn't working well, and he gets restuck again at 28, and there went the rest of his attention units. And believe me, it's a were-were auditor and a were-were preclear. The hell with it. You see? At 14 minutes past, you should be sharp enough to understand that the session, as far as he's concerned, was over, and you'd better start it all over again, because you've had a session. The session was 14 minutes long and ended in disaster. You got it? Only maybe you're not too much on the qui-vive, and maybe you just bypass it, and maybe you say, well, it's just this fellow's comm lags. Maybe it's just his comm lags that's making this thing happen. Maybe he's just comm lagging. He's getting less and less willing to answer questions. Boy, please do this for me. Learn to differentiate between willingness, drop of, and comm lag, increase of. A comm lag setting in does not connotate dropped willingness. But a preclear, too slightly acknowledged by the auditor, with insufficient two-way communication, begins to withdraw his willingness from the session. And that's the only thing an auditor has to work with, the willingness of the preclear. And where he loses that, he loses the only gold there is in this universe. This is so much the case, and is so easily forgotten, that governments fail, revolutions take place, worlds end. And they end simply because they forgot that the only thing there was present in the first place was willingness to play a game. That's the only thing was there. That's the only thing you can tax. The only thing you can stop. There's nothing else to tax or stop or turn upside down or throw away but willingness to play the game. It's the only reason a job gets done. A job never gets done because somebody's standing there with a whip. That whip isn't driving anybody into the execution of a job. It is simply extracting the remaining atoms of willingness. And these can be so slight as to turn around the other way and become a willingness to destroy. And so we have a Christian revolution in the Roman Empire. The willingness to work becomes only a willingness to succumb. The only thing that any nation can tax, that any group can exist on, is the willingness to play the game, to do, to survive, to continue on. Now that, by the way, doesn't just apply to auditing. It's a terrifically, fantastically important principle. When this gets forgotten, auditing sessions stop. But also when it gets forgotten, groups break up. And also when it gets forgotten, governments come to an end. And they begin to have to pass law after law and punishment after punishment and upset after upset. And they even get out to a point where they will practically slaughter the entire population in an effort to get that one last drop of willingness. There was a little baby that lived over on Palace Court that was still willing to smile when you rattle the rattle at him. Well, they just have to shoot him up, that's all, to get that last item. Get the idea? You are increasing in the preclear, then, only one thing. You aren't increasing his ability to exteriorize. You aren't increasing his ability to play tricks. You aren't increasing his ability to think faster or forget more quickly. You're simply increasing his willingness to play the game. And when you decrease his willingness to play the game called auditing, don't think then that any process will ever carry you through into increasing his willingness to play the game called life. He must always audit better than he can live, or he won't live better than he can audit or be audited. Do you follow me? The increase of willingness to play the game in session is very marked. The person simply looks brighter, is less easily stopped, can outflow better. Now, quite an interesting thing can occur with a preclear. something that is fabulously important to us, is that we can run a session, see the preclear getting brighter and brighter and brighter. It's only important because it's something you can observe directly. We run this session, the preclear is getting brighter and brighter, they're more vivacious, they're talking better, they're acting more alert, and then we stop the session. And we watch them sag. They always sag a little bit. Learn to expect that. They always will. The auditing session must have more life in it than the game called life, or it wouldn't ever benefit life. So don't be disappointed when your preclear, who has been doing so marvelously well during this entire intensive, comes back the following week and says they still have a little twinge in their ear. Of course they have. But their ear doesn't feel like it's coming off, which is what it did before the session began. You get it? There'll always be this little drop back. Always. And what's very, very interesting is that our auditing has to be so much better in terms of life than life itself. We've got to have a better auditing session than we have life. And we are doing something according to that which is utterly fantastic. We're evidently kicking up the potential of life to such a degree that the fellow can run on charged batteries for years. And we've done it consistently and continually. I audit somebody who's dying for a couple of hours in a city close to here, never hear of him again. And the other morning, I see him here, and he's still alive. And more than that, he's functioning, he's back in the run, he's doing things. What kind of necromancy is this? That we can create enough life in a period of 2 hours to run a fellow that long? 2.5 years. That's impossible. Well, of course it would be impossible if we were dealing with quantity, which we are not. We're not dealing with a quantity called time or mass or energy or anything else. We are simply dealing with the consideration of willingness. And that makes it very, very simple. And that's a very fortunate thing for us. But if you're going to get any auditing done, you're going to follow through very closely on what I've told you about willingness to live, because it first represents itself as willingness to continue the session. It gets that elementary. But if a preclear becomes unwilling to continue the session, and sometime during the session we find he's unwilling the session, we must have made a terrible auditing blunder somewhere in the past in that session. The session must have stopped a long time ago. For the preclear to get up to a point where he wants to stop the session, where you should pick this up is when he begins to slag off just a little bit in the session. He just skids off a little bit. Will you say the session is slowing down? There is less an auditor here, and less a preclear here, and there's less auditing going on. So gab, gab, walla, walla, get it in there in two-way communication, smooth it out, make sure that the process which he is running is not itself cutting him down. And we've got it, you see. And we do this in various ways, but one of the things that we have to do is to give him a consistency, to give him a continued willingness to continue that session. But very, very, very important, we must do two things. We must duplicate the exact auditing question time and time again without that action killing his willingness to execute it. Boy, that takes some doing sometimes. And how do we do that? We throw dunnage into that line. Dunnage. We don't bury the auditing question. Auditors can make this mistake continually. They make this mistake in this fashion. They try to get more two-way communication going by varying the auditing question of the process. And that's not the way to do it. What you do is keep that question there, just as it is. And you throw dunnage before and after the question. How do we do this? Just casual two-way communication. You could just give it in its crudest form. Well, how are you doing now? Is this killing you? You know, as is-ing the fact that he just thought so. Well, who knows? You might even live through this. Now, what are you kicking your head back like that for? There is the point of origin of communication. Auditors don't realize that these physical motions which a preclear goes into are a highly specialized form of originated communication. Preclear is not able vocally to originate communications. He originates communications by going, click. You know? He sits there and all of a sudden he says, He originated communication, and that's about the only communication origin you get for most preclears in the early part of auditing. It's fantastic. They hardly know that they have done it at all. But you consider immediately that they've originated a communication. That's your consideration. You hang them with it. See? You say, what did you say? What was that? And they do have the sensation that they've spoken or something of the sort. That's a condensed communication taking place in physical action instead of a vocal expressed level. So we hang them with it. We make them originate communications like mad. And if you know how to do this, then the repetition of the exact auditing question becomes very elementary. Very elementary. Because we're always considering they've originated communications, and we're talking about them, and we go on this way and that way, and maybe our conversation drifts far, far afield from auditing. Never does. We want to know where this guy's going. Only we don't sit there for 3.5 hours using this as an excuse. There's two sides to this. You can two-way communicate the whole session into non-existence. You know you could do that. You're just trying to get over the next auditing question. That's all. You're sitting there like a wolf. You're already spring with that auditing question. But with what relaxed mien, how 1-1 can you get, you know? You want to ask him again, give me something else your mother could say to you. This is what you're trying to get in there. But remember that it isn't just that that's being effective. It's also the two-way communication that's being effective, see? But you're waiting to get that question in. And you don't drift off of getting that question in and so change processes on him. You may have to talk to him now for 3 minutes, which would be a long time. About apron strings and how everybody has always insulted him on the about apron strings and being tied to apron strings and apron strings and apron strings. And he'll finally fill her out on a line and say, if you jab him a little bit with exact, well, what could your mother say to you then? And he'll say, well, you ought to be tied to my apron strings. Yeah, she could say that to me. All he's been doing is working up a figure which has been coming forward toward his answer, don't you see? He's running out an actual stop to his willingness to live. And if you are real clever as an auditor, since we're no longer talking about the elementary yap-yap of process, if you're real clever as an auditor, you'll actually see this action start